Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome to Crime Divers. I'm Laura.
And I'm Jill.
Welcome back.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back, or welcome if you're new here.
Yeah, we're here for another Crime Divers episode. And today, Jill, it is your turn. So where in the world are we?
We're in the USA.
And the title?
The Life and Death of a Movie Star.
Oh.
Yeah, so I've done something a little bit different today.
Okay.
Because it's a famous person.
Right.
You know, because obviously we haven't done a famous person before, I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
No, but I kind of got a bit carried away with myself and I read like 3 books.
Oh, God.
Well, the thing is, you know, when somebody dies, mm-hmm. like on a typical crime case, uh-huh. you don't really find out much about their life because, you know, they weren't famous.
Yeah.
But when you get somebody famous, obviously there's a lot to
talk about.
There's a lot to find out about their life. So that's why I called it The Life and Death.
Oh, so we're going to hear about the life and then the death.
Yeah. So
oh, okay, cool.
I just wanted everybody to be prepared in case you're kind of sitting going, where is this going?
Uh-huh.
You know, we're just going to get into our life and then the death.
Right.
Okay.
Okie dokie.
So, shall we dive in?
Let's dive in.
So, today we are going to talk about movie star Natalie Wood. Now, I'm guessing, because she's my sister and I know her so well, that Laura hasn't actually heard of Natalie Wood. Am I right?
Maybe. Is it that obvious?
Yeah. I mean, she was like, you know, I mean, she was born in 1938, so...
Oh, well, see, I didn't exist then.
Well, neither did I.
No, well, I mean, we don't know any films she's been in. Is she a film star? Movie star?
Yeah, she's a movie star.
Yes.
Because that's the title.
Yes, I realise that.
We'll just get into it and
yeah, you can I'll explain you. It yeah. to me and then maybe I'll have a bit of a recollection that I might
yeah, okay,
recognise then. Something. Okay?
Okay. So, Natalie was born Natalia Nikovena Zakenko. Sorry. She was born on the 20th of July, 1938, in San Francisco. Her dad, Nikolai, was originally from Russia, but when his dad died, his mum moved to Canada with him and his 2 brothers. When he was old enough, Nikolai moved to the US and met Maria Zudilova in San Francisco. She had been born in Siberia, but was raised in China, and she already had a daughter called Olga from her previous marriage.
Wow. Quite multicultural there, eh?
Yes. So that, now you'll understand why I had trouble saying her name.
Yes.
I'm so glad she changed it. So when Maria lived in China, she'd had her fortune read by a gypsy. And this gypsy told her that her second daughter would be a great beauty, known throughout the world.
Wow.
But she also warned her to beware of dark water. So Maria was petrified of water after that.
Oh.
And she managed to pass that fear on to her children as well.
Uh-huh.
I think she sort of passed quite a lot of, like, sort of superstitions and fears and stuff on to her children.
Right, okay.
So, Nikolai and Maria got married in February 1938, and Maria was already pregnant with Natalia. So, and they changed the family name to Gurdon. So, Natalie Wood was... Well, she's not Natalie Wood yet. She's, uh-huh. So now she's Natalia... Gurdon.
Right, okay.
So not long after Natalia was born, they all moved to Santa Rosa. Maria had wanted to be an actress, but had given up on those dreams when she got married. So she was one of these mums that decided, well, you know, I had to give up on my dreams, so my daughter's going to... She's going to do it for me. I'm going to live through her, basically. So Maria would take Natalia to see movies as soon as she was old enough to pay attention. But she wouldn't be taking her for the fun of it. Like, oh, let's have a mother-daughter date. Let's go and see a movie. She'd be taking her to learn because she wanted Natalia to be an actress since she couldn't be one.
Right.
So Maria made Natalia study the actresses in the movies.
So she couldn't just enjoy the film?
No, she wasn't allowed to. She had to study them.
All right.
Because she was determined that Natalia was going to make it big. After all, the gypsy told her she's her second daughter.
Yeah, that's true.
And she told her she was going to be known throughout the world. So she was determined to make that happen.
Fair enough.
And Natalia said later, quote, "My mother used to tell me that the cameraman who pointed his lens out at the audience at the end of the Paramount newsreel was taking my picture. I would pause and smile like he was going to make me famous or something. I believed everything my mother told me," end quote. So eventually Maria's dream for her daughter came true when a film director called Irvin Pitchell came to Santa Rosa to film a movie called Happy Land. So he was looking for extras and Maria was right on it.
Of course.
At the time, Natalia was actually legally Natasha now.
Right, okay.
So that's basically the name in Russia for Natalia is Natasha.
Right, okay.
So she's Natasha Gurdon now.
Jesus, quite confusing all the names.
I know. But she was nearly five by this point. So she had been instructed by her mum to curtsy and look at the director directly in the eyes and smile. And she did exactly that. And he was won over straight away and he wanted her in the movie.
Wow.
So she was cast, and although she was only on the screen for 15 seconds, it was enough to impress the director, Irvin Pitchell. He remained in contact with the family, and 2 years later, he called Maria and asked her to bring Natasha to Los Angeles for a screen test. So Maria, of course, was really, really excited. This was her dream.
Yeah.
Her daughter was going to make it big, so the whole family had to move to LA so that Natasha could pursue her career. Nikolai, her dad, didn't really want to move, but Maria just kept going on, and eventually it was just like...
She got her way.
Right, okay, whatever. So before long, Natasha and her parents and big sister Olga were living in a small rented house in LA. So on the 1st of March 1946, Maria gave birth to another daughter called Svetlana Lisa Gurdon. And by now the family had moved into a bigger house. By now Natasha was seven, and Irvin Pitchell decided she needed a new name, and that's when they came up with Natalie Wood.
Right, okay.
So she never legally changed her name from Natasha Gurdon. But from now on she was known as Natalie Wood. So
our stage name.
Yeah, so I can just call her Natalie from now on.
Yes. Make it easy for you.
Yeah. So the surname Wood was in reference to the film director Sam Wood.
Oh, okay.
So he directed Hollywood hits such as A Night at the Opera, A Day at the Races, Goodbye, Mr. Chips. You've not heard any of these, have you?
No.
The Pride of the Yankees and For Whom the Bell Tolls. And he also directed parts of, you're going to have heard of this one, Gone with the Wind.
Hey, I've heard of that one.
But his work was uncredited on that.
Okay.
Anyway, so the screen test for Natalie was for a film called Tomorrow in Forever. Natalie played a post-World War II German orphan opposite Orson Welles.
Oh yeah, I've heard of Orson Welles.
For anyone who doesn't know who he is, he was an actor, director, producer and screenwriter. He is considered to be among the greatest and most influential filmmakers of all time.
Wow.
So his first film was Citizen Kane.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Uh-huh. Oh, you're doing good.
I've not watched it, but I've heard of it.
No, I know, same. And that's actually consistently ranked as one of the greatest films ever made, so maybe we should watch it sometime.
Maybe we should, yeah.
And he co-wrote, produced, directed and starred in that film. I just like to get across to how famous these people are.
Yeah.
But before she got the part, Natalie, there was a condition. If she could cry on cue, then she could have the job.
All right.
Because at one point she was to take like a bite of an ice cream cone and then she drops it and bursts into tears. So right, obviously she needs to learn to cry on cue. So Maria was like, yeah, of course she can do that. She took her daughter aside, her 7-year-old daughter, she took her aside and told her to think of their dog dying.
Oh, right, okay.
But that didn't really work. So Maria saw that there was a butterfly in a jar. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. But she took the butterfly out of the jar and ripped its wings off.
Oh, my God, that's quite brutal.
Yeah, so Natalie, she's 7.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I can imagine your daughter's 7. I can imagine doing that in front of her.
My God, yeah, she'd probably cry.
Yeah, so she started crying. Natalie started crying, so she shoved her on set, but she's ready now.
Jeez, she was obviously desperate for her to get the part.
That's just kind of, as I said, just try to get across.
The lengths that she would obviously go to make sure she didn't get it.
So Orson Welles later said that Natalie was a born professional. He said she was so good she was terrifying.
Oh, right.
I don't know what he meant by that.
No.
A few months later, she had a small part in a movie called The Bride Wore Boots. And the following year, in 1947, she got a part in The Movie and Mrs. Muir. The Movie and Mrs. Muir. Is that right?
No idea.
I wonder if it's called... Oh, I don't know. Maybe I don't know if I'll get that right or not. Doesn't really matter.
No.
Then 20th Century Fox signed Natalie to her first contract and cast her in a starring role.
Oh, am I going to hear this one?
Yep. As Susan Walker.
Uh-huh.
I actually think it might be one of your favourite films when you were little, but not with her in it, the remake.
Right.
And Susan Walker, a little girl called Susan Walker.
She sounds like the Miracle of 34th.
Exactly. Yes.
Miracle of 34th Street.
Yes.
I was a total, like...
You loved that film, didn't you?
Yeah, because I watched it when... Obviously, the remake.
Yeah, I know. I remember, but I was like, she'll have heard of that.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever watched the original, actually.
Probably not.
No, probably not. But yeah, I definitely watched the remake.
Yeah, I knew you did.
Yes.
So, yes, so that was her. She was Susan Walker.
I'm actually quite impressed that I even got that right.
Do you want a high five?
Yeah.
So this movie was one of the biggest hits of 1947, making more than $2.5 million. Mm-hmm. So I looked it up, and in today's money, that would be $13 million.
Right, yeah, so it was pretty good then.
Not bad. So that was Natalie's big break.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, though, part of her success, apart from being a fantastic actress, was that she was in the right place at the right time. Shirley Temple.
Yes, heard of her. Mm-hmm.
Who had been a child star, was grown up and was now in her late teens, so there was like an opening for a popular child actor.
Yeah.
Just waiting to be filled, so, you know.
Right place, right time. Mm-hmm.
So as she was a child actor, Natalie still had to do schoolwork on set. The law stipulated that she had to spend at least 3 hours a day working with a private tutor. She was a really good student and she got good grades, and as soon as she finished schoolwork, she would run straight to the set. In the same year, 1947, Natalie was acting in a movie called Driftwood.
I might have heard of that.
I haven't. One of her scenes involved running across a bridge in a storm, and the bridge was rigged to collapse as soon as it reached the other side.
Right.
Unfortunately, something went wrong and she ended up being thrown in the water. Now, remember, her mum passed on the fear of water, so that must have been absolutely terrifying.
They wouldn't do that now. You wouldn't find them doing that now. They'd be like stunt doubles.
Yeah. But she did manage to get herself out, but she had broken her wrist.
Right.
But her mum, Maria, was terrified of hospitals. That's another thing.
Oh,
and she refused to let Natalie's wrist be operated on and set properly.
Right.
So they had a doctor at the studio, and he set the bone quickly and incorrectly. So she was actually left with a protruding wrist bone for the rest of her life.
Oh, God, I know. That makes me feel funny.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you on the wrong podcast?
Squish.
a protruding wrist bone.
That's quite tame, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, it's not nice, obviously. But compared to some of the things that we talk about, that's what you're squeamish at.
Yeah, no, it makes me feel funny.
Right, okay, we'll just move on.
Yeah.
She said later that she enjoyed all the attention that she got because of being an actor, and she would constantly be on the go. But she said that her hectic schedule left her unable to remember much of anything that she did between the ages of 10 and 12. After getting so famous on Miracle on 34th Street, she was in over 20 movies as a child.
Wow.
Including, you'll never have heard any of these, but, you know, for everybody else. Obviously, I'm not just telling you this uh-huh, case, I'm yeah. telling everybody else.
Uh-huh.
So she was in the movies including Scudder Who? Scudder Hey?
Scudder what? What?
Yep, Scudder Who? Scudder Hey?
Okay then.
Chicken Every Sunday.
Okay.
The Green Promise. Father Was a Fullback. No Sad Songs for Me. Our Very Own. Never a Dull Moment. The Jackpot. Dear Brat. The Blue Veil. The Rose Bowl Story. Just For You and The Star.
Do you want to know how many I've heard of them?
None. the same as me.
Yep.
I had heard of Natalie Wood, but I didn't know any of the movies. I mean, I knew she was a big movie star, but I didn't know any of the movies that she's in. I'm not one for watching, like, old movies.
No, that's before my time.
Well, obviously. But some people like to watch old movies.
Yeah.
Even, you know, now people our age like to watch old movies.
Yeah, and... see, that's the one thing I don't get about It's a Wonderful Life. Like, oh, everybody God, seems to love to watch that. And I personally just don't get it, because...
It's crap.
And it's black and white, and...
But it's a colour version.
Is there? Yeah. Oh, right, well, yeah. But no, I just... Personally, I don't get it. It's not for me.
I've actually borrowed it off Mum, because Mum has it on DVD.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, and I was like, do you know what? It must have been a few years ago when I was actually in the Christmas spirit. And I was like, I'm going to watch this movie because it's a classic.
Mm-hmm.
So I borrowed it and watched it, and it was shit.
We're not fans.
Sorry, Jake, we'll lose any listeners because...
Well, because we don't like It's a Wonderful Life. Well... You know, if that's how petty they want to be, fair enough.
Sorry about that. So Natalie once said, quote, I spent practically all my time in the company of adults. I was very withdrawn, very shy. I did what I was told, and I tried not to disappoint anybody. I knew I had a duty to perform, and I was trained to follow orders, end quote. And I just thought that was a bit sad. I mean, she does say that she enjoyed being an actor, and mm-hmm. like...
She obviously missed out on things like a normal childhood, I suppose, because she wouldn't have been around all her friends and all that sort of thing, because she'd just be around adults all the time doing the acting.
I just thought saying I knew I had a duty to perform, like a duty and trained to follow orders is just a bit for a kid.
But then her mum instilled that from a young age, clearly, so that's the way that she was, wasn't it?
Yeah. So in 1953, Natalie decided to try her hand in TV. She starred in the family sitcom The Pride of the Family. She played the teenager. Did you hear something there?
No.
Oh.
Are you imagining things?
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought I heard somebody shouting. No.
And that's just your voice talking.
I don't know. It's weird. Anyway. So she played the teenager daughter of an all-American 1950s family, but the series only aired for one season. She also appeared in the episodes of The Pepsi Cola Playhouse, Public Defender, Mayor of the Town, Four Star Playhouse, The Ford Television Theatre, and General Electric Theatre. She made a guest appearance on the game show Jukebox Jury. I've heard of that, but I don't know what it is.
No, no idea.
And she also appeared in a TV adaptation of Heidi.
Oh, I've heard of Heidi.
I love Heidi.
No, not a fan.
Oh, there's been way too many adaptations of Heidi.
Couldn't even tell you which one I'd watched. If I'd watched, but I can't remember, so...
Well... There's one particular one, I couldn't tell you who the actress is or anything, but there is one particular one that I like, and I bought it on DVD. There's two parts to it, and I made John watch it.
Poor John.
We got the mattress from the bedroom, took it into the living room, lay on the mattress all weekend, and just watched every single episode.
Poor John.
I know. Yeah. To be fair, it was quite good about it. It was...
Fair enough.
Hey, I watched plenty of stuff that I didn't know what I watched for him.
Oh, fair enough.
So with not having much luck in TV, she went back to movies. By the time her next film came out, which was The Silver Chalice in 1954, she wanted to act in more grown-up roles. This movie didn't do well, and Maria started worrying that Natalie was losing her charm.
Right.
So she made her then 15-year-old daughter spend time with Frank Sinatra, who was 38 at the time and recently divorced.
Okay.
So nobody actually knows the nature of their friendship.
Mm-hmm.
But later Frank said, quote, she gave me the feeling that she was always glad to be alive, that she was a happy kind of human being, and she exuded a lot of happiness when she was with you. She giggled a lot, she loved to laugh, end quote. So, I mean, it sounded like he liked her, but I'm really hoping it wasn't in any...
Just an innocent friendship.
But even then, it's still a bit strange for a 15-year-old and a 38-year-old to be friends, isn't it?
Yeah,
because what would you talk about?
Well, yeah, you wouldn't...
You wouldn't have anything... Well, I suppose you've got movies, and, yeah, you know, because they were both famous and all that kind of stuff, but...
I don't know, but hey-ho.
So by the time Natalie was 16, she wanted independence. She wanted to go out with friends, she wanted to date, and go to parties, but Maria wouldn't let her. Right. She was really strict with her. Everyone was always just about her career, everyone, you know, about the acting and everything, which let the kid have a life.
Well, exactly. Hey. I know. I mean,
let her have some fun.
Exactly.
And she did have her own car, but she wasn't allowed to drive it by herself very often. So what's the point? And sometimes they would have like young actors come over to the house to hang out and chill by the family pool. But Maria was always watching. So, you know, like she just didn't have any privacy.
No. It basically sounds like Maria was basically wanting to control every aspect of her life because maybe she was benefiting, like, financially from her daughter's career, probably. And
didn't want
to see it go down the pan. She obviously wanted to keep it going.
And she was living her life through her as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just think all the famous people she would be meeting and the money and...
Yeah, exactly. You know.
So because of Maria, Natalie was still seen as the young, innocent child who was still being offered child roles. She read for the party of... The party? She didn't read for the party. She read for the part of Judy in Rebel Without a Cause. But the director, Nicholas Ray, thought she was too nice for the part. She was still a little girl and he refused to cast her. Little did he know that Natalie was drinking, she was smoking. Like, she had a mouth that would make a sailor blush. Like.
Oh dear. But she just portrayed herself as if she wasn't a nice girl.
Maria was making her portray herself like that, like she was still the young child.
She's an actor, I mean, isn't it? You know, you're never always going to play the nice roles, you know. So obviously, you could play, like, not so good roles.
Well, you need to grow up. You grow up, don't you?
Exactly.
So one night, Maria actually let Natalie have a little bit of freedom. So Natalie went out on a drunken night out with actor Dennis Hopper. And she was driving her car and she crashed. So she was rushed to hospital. And the director, after hearing what happened, went to see her in the hospital. And he arrived just as she was regaining consciousness. And he was speaking to the doctor and they didn't realise that Natalie could hear them. And the doctor called her a goddamn juvenile delinquent. And Natalie then shouted out, quote, "Did you hear what he called me, Nick? He called me a goddamn juvenile delinquent. Now do I get the part?" End quote. And she did.
Yeah. Oh, well, well done, doctor.
And she also got her first Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actress. Although I'm sure that must have been pretty... bittersweet because her co-star James Dean died 3 weeks before the movie premiered.
Ah, I've heard of James
Dean. Yeah. So Natalie was now becoming more rebellious at this time in her life. She said, "I was so overprotected. I used to think I was as delicate as people said I was." She had managed to persuade her mum to let her go to high school at one point and she graduated in 1955.
Mm-hmm.
She was actually trying to help her little sister Svetlana break into the industry. So Natalie actually persuaded the director of a film that she was in called The Searchers to cast Svetlana as the younger version of Natalie's character.
Oh, right.
They probably looked alike and stuff.
Oh, yeah, fair enough.
And I don't know if you'll have heard of her. Well, no, if you've not heard of Natalie, you'll not have heard of her sister. So she was now called Lana Wood.
No.
And she ended up being a famous actress as
well. Did she? Well.
She's 76 and she's still acting now and she's been in loads of stuff, including a Bond film.
Well, maybe I would know her face.
I don't know.
Okay. Fair enough.
Anyway, back to Natalie.
Yes.
After the release of Rebel Without a Cause, she appeared in quite a few movies, but she felt they were beneath her dignity as an actress. Whilst making a film called A Cry in the Night, Natalie had a torrid affair with a co-star, Raymond Burr, but the studio heads went out of their way to end the relationship as they knew that Raymond preferred men. So I don't know why. Well, he would have, at that time, he was obviously trying to hide it.
Yeah. I suppose it wasn't like as common as it is now. It would have been kept far more secretive, wouldn't it?
No, I'm sure it was just as common, but it wasn't.
Well, I mean, like publicly, it wasn't as common. Yes. I mean, they would have kept it, like, obviously...
Yeah.
Privately.
So on her 18th birthday, Natalie, who was so desperate to get away from her mother and be independent, proposed to her boyfriend, Scott Marlowe. They had met through their mutual friend, James Dean, and they got closer after his death. But Maria was having none of it. And she made Natalie go out on a date with actor Robert Wagner instead of having an 18th birthday party.
Oh.
But she must have been quite happy with that anyway, because Robert later said... quote, "I saw Natalie around town, but she never seemed interested. She was making Rebel Without a Cause and hanging out with James Dean. I was with an older crowd. The first time I remember really talking to her was at a fashion show in 1956. She was beautiful, but still gave no hint about the mad crush she had on me. I later found out that she had signed with my agent simply because he was my agent."
All right.
A month later, I invited Natalie to a premiere on what turned out to be her 18th birthday. At dinner, we both sensed things were different. I sent her flowers and the dates continued. I remember the instant I fell in love with her. One night, on board a small boat I owned, she looked at me with love. her dark brown eyes lit by a table lantern. That moment changed my life, end quote. But actually, Natalie and Robert didn't see each other again until 5 months later. And during that 5 months, she was still engaged and continued to date other men, including Elvis Presley.
Oh.
You know, just Elvis Presley. Just nobody special.
Nah,
just, you heard of him?
Yeah. I'm not sure, actually, have I?
it's just some guy. I think he used to sing or something.
Oh, right. Okay, well. Fair enough. Somebody famous, I don't know.
So Warner Brothers and Maria pressured Natalie to break off her engagement to Scott. She did, but she just wanted to be married to someone. As I said, she just wanted to get away from her mum.
Uh-huh.
So she narrowed her search down to two men. So there was Robert Wagner and Nicky Hilton. So Nicky's real name is Conrad Nicholas Hilton Jr. And I know you're going to be wondering, yes, he is related to Paris. He's Paris Hilton's great uncle.
Oh, right, okay.
And he was Elizabeth Taylor's first husband.
Right, yes, I know who Elizabeth Taylor is.
He died in 1969 when he was only 42 from a heart attack.
Oh, that's a shame.
So Robert Wagner, he's an actor and he's been in loads of stuff. I used to watch him in the TV show Heart to Heart.
Nah.
I think I used to watch it with Mum. Because we probably
watched a lot of films, you know.
Just not that's not a film; it's TV series.
Oh, TV series.
Yeah, film. I'm sure we probably only had one telly in the house at the time, and I think me and Mum used to watch it.
Yeah.
So he was the star in the TV show Heart to Heart. He had recurring roles in Two and a Half Men.
No.
That's still on.
Is it?
Two and a Half Men.
I don't know. Maybe I don't recall.
It's a comedy.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I've heard of it, but I've never watched it.
Neither have I. But
I don't
heard
know.
Of it.
I don't know.
And he's been in quite a few episodes of NCIS. Now, please tell me you've heard of NCIS.
Yes, I've heard of that.
He was in the Austin Powers films, The Pink Panther, The Tower and Inferno, and like, there's just way too many to mention. He's still alive. He's 92.
Okay.
So Natalie was more interested in Nicky Hilton, but he was fiery. He would drink and take drugs, so she decided that Robert would be a better husband as he was older and more stable.
Right.
And even though it does sound like she went with her head rather than her heart, when they did start a relationship, she did fall in love with Robert and she really did want to marry him.
Okay.
So on the 6th of December 1957, Robert proposed. He poured her a glass of champagne and put the engagement ring in there. Now,
please tell me she didn't swallow it.
Well, yeah, that's supposed to be romantic, but no, my luck. I wouldn't notice it and I would just knock it back and swallow it. Anyway, she didn't choke on it.
Okay.
And she said yes and they got married 3 weeks later. So Warner Brothers were especially happy because two of their favourite stars been together, like, you know, that gave them loads of publicity.
Mm-hmm.
So when they got back from their honeymoon, they settled into married life and Natalie gave it her all. She took being a wife seriously and she obviously just wanted them both to be happy. One of the things she had to learn to love though was Robert's boat. She was still terrified
of the water
uh-huh. And she would never willingly go in any body of water like bigger than a swimming pool.
Right, okay.
So, but sailing was a passion of Robert's, so she wanted to share that with him. She began to enjoy being on Robert's boat, which was called My Other Woman. I thought it was quite a good name actually, because that's like the other love of his life.
Yeah.
So the other woman,
yeah, I get that. As long as that's all the only other woman, and it was a boat, and it wasn't an actual person.
No. Anyway, so she actually eventually felt at home enough to have a wee snooze when they were out on it. So she, you know, she got more comfortable on it.
Mm-hmm.
Robert teased her one day about falling asleep and ignoring her. And what she said is actually quite chilling, consider what happens later. She said, quote, "Don't you realise that here I am, out in the middle of the ocean, the boat could sink, a storm could come up, anything might happen. But am I afraid? No. So I lay in the sun and fall asleep a little. Why? Because I feel with you, I feel safe. But most of all, happy. That's a compliment," end quote. And I thought, that is, you know, she's got this big fear of water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and but she feels okay enough to be with him on the water.
So for the first six months of their marriage, Natalie didn't do any acting. She didn't want to be away from her new home and her husband, but after the honeymoon period wore off, she went back to work. So in 1961, she acted in a movie called Splendor in the Grass with newcomer Warren Beatty.
Oh, I've heard.
Warren Beatty.
Yes, I heard him.
It
is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And there were rumours for years that they had an affair, but she denied it. Just as that movie wrapped up, she was offered the role of Maria in West Side Story.
Heard of that.
Well done. Hey. That year, Natalie and Robert split up and got divorced the following year.
That's a bit rubbish.
The rumours were that they had split up because Natalie was having an affair with Warren Beatty, but her sister Lana and other sources reported that that wasn't the case. What actually happened was, one night in June, Natalie woke up in the middle of the night and Robert wasn't asleep beside her. She went looking for him and found him in another bedroom in a bed with a man.
Oh.
See, when you're saying about another woman, I'm like, not quite.
Yeah, not quite. But then, like, who has the audacity to actually have another person in your house, in her spare room?
Well,
I mean, really?
If that's true. That's, you know, she's said that, her sister said that. I mean, he's obviously denied it, so.
But then, if it's with a man, he probably would have denied it, wouldn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So who knows?
So she called her parents, they came and picked her up and took her to their house. That night, Natalie overdosed on sleeping pills and fell into a coma. So she woke up in hospital and sank into depression. She started seeing a therapist every day for months. Both Robert and Natalie kept quiet about their split. They didn't talk to reporters, but people close to Natalie, including her mum, started the rumours about Robert being with a man. So as I said before, whether it's true or not.
Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah. So their divorce came through just before Natalie's 23rd birthday and she was starting to be seen in public again as she had hidden away since the split.
Jeez, you forget she's only 23, yeah.
I know, you would think she's 50 by now.
I know, I'm thinking she's a lot older by now, but geez, only 23.
I know, and she's done so much with her life already.
Mm-hmm.
So she'd often be seen in the company of Warren Beatty. I think it sounds weird when I say Beatty, but that's how we speak. Like, we don't say our T's, do we?
Beatty.
But he was also recently divorced and they had started dating. So she went back to work and she seemed happy. She was always upbeat. And in the movie, The Great Race, even her sister, Lana, thought she looked happier and prettier than ever. But on the day filming ended, Natalie drove home and took a bottle of prescription sleeping pills. She called an old friend and luckily he could tell something was wrong as she sounded really groggy, so he rushed over and found her unconscious and he drove her to the hospital.
Right.
So she started therapy again and made some more movies, but by 1966 she had developed a reputation as a less than stellar actress and she was actually voted the worst actress of the year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't realise that was a thing.
But she actually, she owned it. She actually went and collected the award, whereas other people that had got that would be like, hide away in shame. But she's like, do you know what? I'm going to own that. I'm going to go and get my award.
I mean, fair play, but I just... Isn't that just horrible to actually have people vote on you being the worst actor or actress?
Yeah.
I mean, that... You know, to me, that can't be good on your confidence, you know, of your actual acting abilities. That, I just...
I wouldn't have thought so, and that definitely wouldn't be a thing now.
No, didn't they used to have an award that was a bit rubbish, but I can't remember what it was called. I can't remember. I'm sure there was a modern day sort of one that, you know,
really?
if you won it, it wasn't like a proud one to be.
Oh, I don't know.
I need to have a look.
But I just thought, you get it, girl. You go. you own that. You pick up your award.
Fair play.
So she knew that she needed a break. So she took some time off She had split up with Warren Beatty by this time, and she had started dating a British producer called Richard Gregson. He was already married, and they had to wait 2 years for his divorce to go through before they could get married. So they got married in May 1969, and they had a daughter called Natasha in September 1970. And once she was born, Natalie lost all interest in making movies. Her life now revolved around her husband and their daughter. So unfortunately, though, in August 1971, Natalie picked up the phone to make a call, and she heard Richard on the other line talking very provocatively with his secretary. It turned out that he'd been having an affair for 2 years.
Well, so, I mean, to be fair, you know, I was going to say he's got form, but then he didn't say he had an affair with his previous wife, did he? He just said that he'd had.
When they met, he was married, but I don't know if they actually, like,
got together.
Yeah, or if he, like, met her and went, and split up, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
So she divorced him and got full custody of Natasha. Mm-hmm. So as time went on, Natalie and her ex-husband, Robert Wagner, started talking and realised that they'd never gotten over each other. And they both felt that they were mature enough to try again. So in July 1972, just before Natalie's 34th birthday, they got married again.
Jeez, again, 34. So is that like our third bloody marriage?
Yeah. So she'd been married to him,
yeah.
Got divorced, got married to the other guy, got divorced, and then married to him again.
And she's only 34?
And she's only 34.
Bloody hell.
But technically, it's only been two men.
Well, I know. I mean, still at 34, it just seems so young, because, I mean, you know, that's a few years younger than what I am now. And I mean, obviously, I've only got married once and still currently married, happily, so.
Well, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work out.
Clearly.
So Robert also had a daughter from another marriage called Katie, so they were both parents now.
Do you think, sorry, just as a subtle thing, but do you think back in those days, like, people just got married too quickly? Like whereas now, I don't think that necessarily happens. Like, we don't.
There doesn't feel a need to rush into it now, but whereas before, that was the done thing. You got married young. If you wanted to have children, then you weren't supposed to do that until you were married. So if you wanted to have your kids, you'd have to get married. And
Whereas now it's not quite a, you know, you don't see people rushing to get married as much.
Exactly. I mean, some people don't even bother getting married now. They just they have their kids and they just don't bother getting married. So, according to Lana Wood, Natalie's sister, she said, quote, the marriage was considered to be one of the best in Hollywood, and there was no question that Natalie was a devoted, loving mother and stepmother. Natalie and Robert had begun with love and built from there. They had overcome each other's problems and had reached an accommodation with time and the changes time brings. As with anyone else who has settled into making a long marriage work, they were far more determined than most people to make it work, end quote. So within a year of their marriage, Natalie was pregnant and their daughter Courtney was born in 1974, and Robert became Natasha's legal guardian, her daughter from the other marriage. So Natalie was still making movies, but nowhere near as many as before, and she was looking after her kids until they started school. So once they started school, that's when she got back into serious acting, and by the 80s, she was making a good comeback. So in 1981, she was cast as Karen Brace in a film called Brainstorm, which is a futuristic sci-fi film, and her co-star was Christopher Walken.
Oh, I've heard him. Haven't heard of the film, though.
No, but, you know, as we know, he's a massive film star, and he's still working now as well at 79.
Wow.
He's been in over 100 movies and TV shows. Can you name any? Don't look at the computer.
Well, has he been a? He's been in.
I'll put you on the spot, haven't I?
I don't know. I mean, I probably know the films, but I can't actually think.
He's been in Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yeah.
Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah.
Hairspray.
Oh, Hairspray, I knew that one. Yeah.
True Romance. A View to a Kill, which I think is a Bond, A View to a Kill. The Deer Hunter. Sleepy Hollow. And loads, loads, loads more. Actually, I'm sure he was in that movie. I really like that movie that Adam Sandler was in called, I think it was called Click.
Click.
He was in that. He was like the guy that gave him the remote control.
Ah, so that was Christopher Walken.
I love that film.
Yeah, that's one of my most favourite films ever, actually.
I've watched that for years.
I have to watch that. I think that is personally one. I mean, Adam Sandler's done a lot of good films, but that's definitely one of my favourite ones.
So anyway, Christopher and Natalie had become really good friends. You know, they were working together. So in November 1981, the weekend after Thanksgiving, she invited him to join her and Robert for a weekend on their yacht, which was called the Splendor.
Oh, he's got a new yacht and he's changed the name.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's got a different name.
Yeah, this is a different one to when they were first married.
Okay.
So they had invited other guests, but no one else wanted to go as the weather wasn't that great. Mm-hmm. And the sea was, you know, it was going to be a bit choppy that weekend. And then I don't think I would have went either, to be honest.
Well, I get quite seasick, so I definitely wouldn't want to go.
No, I don't get seasick, but I just, the thought of being out at sea and, no thanks. So the three of them set off to Catalina Island with Captain Dennis Davern. So it was the three of them and the captain.
Right.
So it was the 28th of November and Natalie, Robert, Christopher and Captain Dennis had dinner together at a restaurant called Doug's Harbour Reef in Catalina. The manager of the restaurant said they were all quite drunk and he was actually quite worried about them getting back to their yacht safely in their dinghy. So he asked the harbour patrol to make sure that they got made it back okay. Mm-hmm. So they left the restaurant at about 10:30 and Natalie was quite agitated. Like at one point she had smashed a glass off a wall before they left.
Oh.
And Robert was also annoyed because he was convinced that something was going on between Christopher Walken and Natalie uh-huh. as they were being quite flirty.
Right.
So when they got back to the boat, Natalie wandered off by herself. Robert said that he and Christopher got into a debate about whether Natalie should continue acting or should she step away and spend more time with the children.
Son up to Natalie. Like.
Yeah, exactly. Robert wanted her to be a stay-at-home mum, mm-hmm. And Christopher said she should continue acting. So Robert got so angry that he told Christopher it was none of his business, and he smashed a wine bottle on a table. He said that they then resolved the argument and Christopher went to bed. Robert said that just after 11 p.m. he went to bed and he expected to find Natalie already there, but she wasn't. So he looked around the boat for her, but he couldn't find her. And then he realised when he was looking that the boat's dinghy was missing.
All right, okay.
So he alerted Captain Dennis, who suggested like turning on the floodlights so they could look in the water uh-huh. for Natalie. But Robert didn't want to do that as he didn't want to bring too much attention to the boat.
Okay, but surely you want to find your wife?
Mm-hmm. So there were other boats nearby and attention had already been brought. A woman called Marilyn Wayne, who was on one of those other boats, said later that around 11 p.m. she and others on her boat had heard a woman screaming for help and that she was drowning.
All right.
Her boat and their boat was about 50 feet from the Splendor. So she said that she called Harbour Patrol, but no one answered. Mm-hmm. She said, and then on shore there was a party, and it is actually wondered that if the staff from the Harbour Patrol were actually at the party.
Oh dear. That's not good.
So, and when either Dennis or Robert, I don't know which one it was, called Harbour Patrol from their boat, there was no answer either. So Harbour Patrol didn't do too good that night.
No, I would have thought surely somebody must have been on duty or should have been on duty.
Should have been, yeah. Mm-hmm. So Marilyn and whoever was on her boat then heard a male voice that sounded drunk and said something along the lines of, "Hold on, we're coming to get you." And then they didn't hear the woman anymore, so they assumed, "Oh, it was good, the woman's been rescued." They all went to bed. Unfortunately, though, Natalie's body was found in the water at 8 a.m. the next morning. She was about a mile away from the boat. The dinghy was also found nearby.
Right.
So the dinghy hadn't been driven. The rope had been cut to release it from the boat and had drifted until it got to land. Mm. Robert refused to go and identify her body and asked Captain Dennis to do it. When the autopsy was performed, it was noted that Natalie's blood alcohol level was more than twice the legal driving limit and she had several brooms? She had several bruises.
She might have had several bruises.
On her arms, legs and face, believed to be consistent with a fall overboard while she was trying to board the dinghy. So her death was ruled as an accidental drowning.
Okay.
So you may think that's the end of the episode and you're probably wondering why have I told you about an accidental death?
Uh-huh. Well, I'm guessing on a true maybe crime podcast. It's not.
Because I did say it was the life and death. I didn't say it was a murder.
Uh-huh. That is true.
Okay, thanks for listening. Bye.
No, there's more.
Yeah. Well, things just don't add up. Mm-hmm. So why would Natalie be getting off the boat into the dinghy? She was terrified of dark water. So I can't imagine she would want to drive a dinghy by herself in the dark.
Well, I wouldn't have thought so, but I mean, maybe there'd been an argument or a falling out and she just wanted to get away.
Well, according to everybody else, there's just not a chance that she would do it. Like, she, that's how terrified she was.
Not even if she was drunk and not thinking, clearly. No.
Well, according to everybody else, obviously, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But plus she was wearing a nightgown, so she intended on going somewhere. Why wasn't she dressed?
True.
4 weeks after her death, Robert gave a theory as to why she was wearing a dressing gown. He says he doesn't think she was going to get off the yacht. He says maybe the dinghy was banging off the side of the boat and it was keeping her awake.
Right.
So she tried to secure it to stop it banging and she slipped into the water. And he said that the down jacket, it's like a quilted jacket, mm-hmm. that she was wearing must have weighed her down.
But then why was the rope cut?
She also...
on the dinghy.
She also had wool socks on, but no shoes. So that doesn't make sense that she would go into a rain-soaked deck because the weather was bad.
Mm-hmm.
But her socks would get soaking, wouldn't they? So, well, like, yeah. Why have you not got shoes on?
Mm-hmm.
Bit strange.
True. But again, I don't know whether being intoxicated, maybe not thinking clearly.
Mm-hmm. You never know. And why would she have and why wouldn't she have just asked Captain Dennis to sort the dinghy out? This had happened before, like the dinghy banging off the side of the boat, which right. is why Robert came up with the theory.
Uh-huh.
But she would always go to Dennis because that's his job. Mm-hmm. That's his job to do that, and he would
fix it.
He would fix it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew that he was still fully dressed. He hadn't went to bed. He was still fully dressed, so yeah. It doesn't make sense that she wouldn't have asked him to sort it.
No.
And also, whoever called Harbour Patrol from the yacht, because I say I don't know who it was,
mm-hmm.
called at about 1 a.m, which was a couple of hours after Natalie went missing. And then it took another 2 hours for them to call the Coast Guard.
Mm.
Now, if that's not suspicious, I don't know what is.
Well, that's true. Could be working out stories and stuff and panicked.
Maybe cleaning things up.
Yeah.
You know, because mm-hmm. what would take you so long to call for help?
On a boat.
Exactly. I mean, maybe in other circumstances it would be different, but... if she's not on the boat, there's only one other place that she could be.
Well, exactly. So you'd
she'd be in the water or in the dinghy on the uh-huh. water, because obviously the dinghy wasn't there either.
Yeah.
But surely, knowing that she was terrified of the water and all that...
you'd think they would really want to quickly get somebody some help.
Exactly. And a few days after Natalie's death, Marilyn Wayne, the woman who said that she tended the schemes, received an anonymous note at work, and it said, quote, "If you value your life, keep quiet about what you know." End quote.
Ooh.
So, 30 years after Natalie's death, the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department reopened their investigation after receiving additional information from unidentified sources who contacted the authorities. Not everyone was unidentified, though, so obviously I don't know what that was all about. But Captain Dennis did an interview on the 18th of November 2011 with NBC's Today, and he said he lied about Natalie's death. And when he was originally questioned by the police, he also claimed that Robert Wagner was actually responsible for the death.
All right, okay.
To start off with, he said that he didn't want to take the yacht out that weekend
mm-hmm.
because of the weather forecast.
Yeah.
You know, even the marina manager had told him, because she'd came along and, "Look, what are you doing?"
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "Oh, I'm taking the boat out, mm-hmm. the yacht out." And she was like, "You're crazy. Like,
the weather's not good."
Yeah, though. You shouldn't be doing that. And Dennis said that he'd tried to talk them out of it, but they wouldn't listen to him. He had been working for them for 7 years, and this was the first time that they wouldn't take his advice.
But surely he would still be in control of that, because he could just point blank refuse to drive the boat.
Well, you would think, but maybe... they would make him lose it, like they would fire him, and he would lose his job.
Yeah, maybe felt like he obviously couldn't stand up to them, basically.
Mm-hmm. And he said, as soon as the trip started, Robert was in a mood. Usually, when they had guests, he loved it. He would be in a great mood. He was, you know, he'd be delighted to have guests on board. But this weekend, he wasn't happy about Christopher being there and the flirting that was going on between him and Natalie. So now you're probably wondering, well, why did Robert go ahead with the trip? Why did he let Christopher come with them?
Yeah.
Well, Dennis thinks it's because he wanted to prove to Natalie that she could trust him to believe her that she wasn't having an affair with Christopher.
Right, okay.
That he knew that what people were saying, but he wanted to prove that he could handle it and that he wasn't threatened by Christopher, who was a good-looking guy and he was, like, 12 years younger than him.
Right.
So he was kind of, like, trying to prove a point.
Yeah.
Saying, yes, come on the boat, I'm fine with it, it's all cool, I'm not going to flip out.
Yeah.
But remember, that's only Dennis's opinion.
Opinion, yeah.
So... and he wasn't doing a very good job of hiding his jealousy, and Natalie was pissed off with him. So basically, they were both just pissed off at each other.
So, great. That sounds like a fun weekend.
For Christopher.
I know.
He said the captain said that Robert had wanted to move the boat on that Friday night to go to Isthmus.
Don't hospital.
Which was over 10 miles away. And of course, it was pitch black outside. So Natalie's like, no, no way. Like, no. We're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And Dennis said that he wanted to get away from there. So Dennis said that Robert wanted to get away from there, is it at the Catalina Island, because he didn't like hanging with Christopher and Natalie in public, and he felt like a third wheel.
All right.
He was the
but
husband.
Then he was the one that invited them all on the boat anyway.
It's all very weird. All very weird.
Yeah.
So Natalie just wanted him to move the boat in the morning, like, you know, like a normal person, but Robert was running around like a madman, getting the boat ready to leave, and she was furious, and she went to the bedroom and started packing a bag.
Right.
Christopher was in his room, and Captain Dennis went to his room and asked him to have a word with Christopher, with Robert. But Christopher refused, saying he should never get involved in the middle of a married couple's argument. Dennis couldn't let him move the boat. It was dangerous, but Robert was drunk and he was mad. Dennis told him that Natalie was packing a bag to leave, and Robert shouted, fine, go, then go with her. Like, both of you just leave.
Mm-hmm.
So Dennis shouted back that he couldn't move the boat as it was too dangerous. And Robert eventually turned the engine off and said sorry, and that maybe Dennis should take Natalie off the yacht for the night.
Mm-hmm.
So they stayed at in a hotel. They booked separate rooms. Natalie was a bit scared that she knew people had seen her and recognised her, so she was worried that someone might break into her room or something right. happened.
Uh-huh.
So she asked Dennis to stay in her room. They slept in the same bed. He said that he offered to sleep on the floor, but she let him sleep in the bed, but he had to keep all his clothes on. Natalie had actually wanted to get a plane off the island the next day, but there were none available, so she told Dennis that they were going back to the yacht. So they went back to the yacht. Everyone was on edge and obviously just hating each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they went out for dinner, as I told you before.
Yeah.
And then they came back to the yacht at night. So Dennis said that all Natalie and Christopher talked about was their movie, and Robert was feeling left out and eventually shouted, quote, so what do you want to do to my wife? Do you want to fuck my wife? Is that what you want? Mm-hmm. End quote.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he smashed the wine bottle.
Uh-huh.
So his story's a bit different too.
Yeah.
To Dennis's. So Christopher got up and went to his cabin. He was like, nah, fuck this out. Mm-hmm. I'm out here.
Yeah, fair enough.
Natalie turned to Robert and told him that she couldn't tolerate that kind of behaviour, and she stormed off to their room. But when police had asked later, Dennis had lied and told them that it had been a pleasant weekend. He lied and told them that Natalie and him had stayed at the hotel because she was afraid of the bad weather, not because she'd been arguing with her husband.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Dennis said that he made Natalie some tea and hoped that she would come out of her room for it, and Robert went to their room to apologise to her. He came back about half an hour later, and that's when he told Dennis that Natalie was missing. So he was away for half an hour.
Unaccounted for.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So Robert had told Dennis that he had looked everywhere for her, but yet Dennis hadn't seen him. He'd been away for half an hour, and if he'd been looking all over the boat, then surely Dennis would have seen him.
Well, you'd have thought so. Surely the boat's not that big, is
well,
it?
Exactly. So Dennis started looking for Natalie. He looked in Christopher's room, and he said that Christopher was asleep. He looked over the front of the boat while Robert went to the back, and when they met back up, Robert said that Natalie must have gone ashore and would probably be back soon, but Dennis said that he knew that Natalie wouldn't have went by herself.
Mm.
I mean, this guy's known them for 7 years, and he was actually quite close with both of them. Like, right, they were actually friends as well as...
like an employee.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot more to their relationship and stuff. Like, because he actually co-wrote a book. Can't remember what it was called now.
They're surprised.
but basically given his account of what happened, uh-huh. and obviously, like, I can't write a whole book here.
No.
Because I read three.
Yeah. Exactly. So if anybody's interested, I'm sure they could.
If anybody, yeah, just look up. Well, you can email me or DM me or whatever and ask me what the name of the book is, because I can't remember.
I'm assuming she'll look it up so she can actually tell you.
Yeah, of course. rather than calling the Coast Guard, Robert kept pouring Dennis drinks. And Dennis was scared. He didn't know what the hell was going on. Robert told him that he had to tell the authorities that they'd had a pleasant weekend. He didn't want any bad publicity because he didn't want to jeopardise his career.
Of course not.
And after Natalie's death, Dennis lived with Robert, but he wasn't allowed to go anywhere by himself, not even to stay at his girlfriend's house.
Right.
And he was also given Robert's accountant's details. So if he ever wanted money, he could just call the accountant and like be able to pick up the money within an hour. Like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So after the case had been looked at again, no one has been held responsible for Natalie's death. But in 2012, her death certificate was changed from the cause of death being accidental drowning to drowning and other undetermined factors.
Mm.
So the amended document included a statement saying that it's not clearly established how Natalie ended up in the water. In 2013, the LA County Coroner's Office added to Natalie's autopsy report. It stated that Natalie may have sustained some of the bruises on her body before she went into the water,
mm-hmm.
but this could not be definitively determined. In 2020, a doctor... Huh? A doctor found a former intern of the medical examiner at the time of Natalie's death. I don't understand what that says. So anyway, in 2020, there was somebody who'd been an intern mm-hmm. at the medical examiner at the time of Natalie's death, stated that the bruises were substantial and fitting for someone thrown out of a boat, and he claimed that he had made those observations to the medical examiner, but they weren't noted.
Mm-hmm.
In February 2018, Robert Wagner was named a person of interest by the police in the investigation. They said that they know Robert was the last person to be with Natalie before she disappeared. And the coroner's report from 2013 said that Natalie had unexplained and fresh bruising on her right forearm, left wrist and right knee, a scratch on her neck and superficial scrapes on her forehead. So officials said that it is possible that she was assaulted before she drowned. Mm. I mean, why was this not all autopsy report before?
You think it would be.
So what do you think?
I personally think that she's had a row with Robert. There's been some violence.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe she's tried to escape and they've been out on the deck and then she's like pushed her overboard or something, you know?
Yeah, I mean...
I'm not sure like necessarily thrown overboard. I'm thinking more of like the argument spilled out onto the deck or whatever they've had it. There's been an altercation and he's maybe pushed her or she's tried to get out of his grasp or something and it's caused her to go overboard.
But if that happened, why didn't he help her out? Why was the dinghy cut? And why hasn't he like panicked and jumped in the water after him? Surely if your wife has fell into the water, no matter whether you're having an argument or not, surely you're going to jump in and try and save her.
Maybe he was quite happy that she fell in.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, so whether or not he intentionally did it, he didn't do anything to help her not drown.
Yeah. Mm.
So, and that, like with that Marilyn, she said that she heard a man's voice saying, hold on, I'm coming to get you or something like that. And then, was that him? And then he's just left her.
Maybe.
Well, she's screaming that she's drowning.
Yeah. Or maybe it's one of the cases of, you know, you see in films that, oh, it might look bad, so I didn't want to tell the truth.
Mm. What do you mean?
Well, sometimes, like, if an accident's happened or something, and then people think that it might look bad on them if they tell the truth about what's actually happened, but they've not actually done anything bad. It just might look bad. They just don't tell the truth.
I'm talking about Marilyn.
Yeah, but I'm saying about Robert. If he didn't intentionally mean to kill her and she's fallen overboard, and because they've had the argument, maybe he didn't want to be honest about that, so he didn't want to say that they'd had an argument because then people might think that he did do it.
Well, yeah. No matter what, I think.
Well, he definitely knows more than he's letting on. I think that's safe to say. He definitely knows more about what happened to her than we obviously know.
Yeah, and if anybody wants to sort of look more into it, there's, as I said, I read like 3 books, but there's like more. I mean, like our sister, Lana Turner, I'm sure she wrote a book as well. And I'm because I just went onto the Kindle Unlimited
mm-hmm.
and I got them off there, but there was other ones that you'd have to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, no, I'll get the free ones. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I mean, there's probably way more. I mean, like I could have sat here for hours.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but I think that was enough.
Yeah, that's definitely enough. But yeah, so thank you for that.
Yep, so thanks to everybody for listening. If you would like to follow us on social media or get in contact, we are crime_divers_pod on Twitter and Instagram. Our email is crime_divers_pod@outlook.com. our YouTube and TikTok, our Crime Divers podcast. If you would like to support the show financially, we are on Patreon. You can get bonus episodes and early access ad-free episodes. That's patreon.com/crimedivers. Or if you'd just like to buy us a coffee, it's buyacoffee.com/crimedivers.
And if you haven't already, please don't forget to subscribe, rate and review.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.